Ciao, and welcome to the Frontier Space Podcast, a dialogue about how space technology and exploration are transforming our solar system.
Thanks for joining us and agreeing to be on here. Just finished reading your wonderful manuscript and study from 2020.
Sure, I can give an overview. So, and this method is basically using physics. Imagine that I like to give this example. If you are if you are the asteroid and you are holding a rope and you have another person on the other side, so let's say you are just spinning yourself, and then suddenly you have a rope and somebody on the other side spinning, and then the other person is moving you away from your center of mass while the person is spinning around you. So basically the method is similar to that. You are affecting the center of gravity of the potentially hazardous asteroid by attaching a tether and another mass in the other end. So you're basically trying to change the center of mass of the asteroid, and by changing the center of mass of the asteroid, you're changing all the orbital elements. And orbital elements are, the main ones are inclination, eccentricity, semi-major axis. There are six, but these are the basic ones. Then, and if you are affecting the orbital elements, with time, you will be affecting the orbit of the asteroid. So this is the main concept of the asteroid, of the this method. To change the center of mass of the asteroid.
Awesome. Thanks for the analogy there. Yeah, it looks like not too complex geometry for the tethered asteroid system. So we would connect two asteroids, a potentially hazardous asteroid and a smaller asteroid nearby. And sweet.
And there's also the option, which was first studied. Let's say you bring a mass from the Earth, but the problem is for people who knows space missions and knows how spacecraft work, any extra weight is very costly. So if you are bringing that mass from the Earth, you have to add more fuel, and that's way more costly. So that's also in the idea of there are a lot of asteroids out there, a lot. So the idea is to use a mass that is already in space, because then you wouldn't have to bring it from the Earth to launch this mass.
Excellent. I think you and your team, you guys are onto something here with this tethered asteroid system. And would love to discuss about more about asteroids and potentially hazardous asteroids and kind of the underlying motivators behind your work and this wonderful research study you guys published in 2020 called Dynamics of Tethered Asteroid Systems to Support Planetary Defense.
And for those who don't know what is a potentially hazardous asteroid, so you have what is called near Earth asteroid. And within the nearest asteroids is what you call potentially hazardous asteroids, which are asteroids that are larger than 140 meters and that can come closer than about 20 times the distance from the Earth to the Moon. So this is the definition of what is a potentially hazardous asteroid.
Yeah, it sounds like most of the PHAs, they're the larger than 1 kilometer asteroids are known, but the PHAs, it sounds like they could be one of the largest threats for life on Earth, I think, in the long term. It's also a lot of work to be done in terms of how we would survive an asteroid knowing it was too late, but you could imagine some kind of grand migration underground. But it all kind of... I guess how many years in advance do you think we would know about a hazardous asteroid larger than 1 kilometer?
Yeah, so that's it. This is another thing that I do. one is study dynamics of small bodies, but another thing is also aerobic observations, planetary radar observations, and there are also optical observations. So asteroids are discovered mainly by optical surveys and infrared too, but in general, more optical surveys. So the reason why it has been increasing the number of discoveries is because there are more optical surveys. Most of them are in the Northern Hemisphere. So it would be great if we had more in the Southern Hemisphere. There is one that is, it's called the Vera Rubin Telescope in Chile. So that's gonna help a lot after 2023 when it starts operating, because according to the angle that you, when you are observing the asteroid, you might not see if it's coming from the Southern Hemisphere. So first of all, we have to discover them. That's the first thing. In the past, we just talked about how we would survive even if an asteroid was coming. And now things changed. In the past, asteroid deflection was just science fiction. It was just Hollywood movie and science fiction. But now it's actually becoming a reality. There will be even a upcoming mission to test an asteroid deflection method in collaboration with Europe. It's called the DART mission in US and HERA in Europe, so called AIM. So now instead of science fiction, it became a reality. We can do something in the future if something happens, but the problem is we first have to know in advance that it's coming. So that's what optical surveys do. But then the second part, to know what would be the damage, how we were going to deflect the asteroid, and if we can't deflect the asteroid, just how would be the damage and where it's coming, then there's characterization needed. Characterization is knowing the size of the asteroid, the composition, the orbit of the asteroid, and what can do, what it can use to do that very, very precisely is radar, planetary radar observations. And there was in the Arecibo Observatory in Goldstone in California. There are not many in the world. There are other small ones, but those are the main ones. And radar observations give you the precise orbit, very precise orbit of the asteroid in hundreds of years. So that's the first main important thing is, first you have to know precisely where the asteroid is gonna be in the future. So you ask how long in advance. So that's important. Usually when optical asteroids discover asteroid, the orbit uncertainty is still very large. So you don't know, you know, like in a couple of years where the asteroid is gonna be precisely, but it's hard to propagate the orbit in decades and centuries. And that's when radar observations become very important, because you do one radar observation in 10 minutes, you can know where the asteroid is gonna be in 100 years. So we need more of those. We need more planetary radar facilities, and we don't have many. So,
wow.
And what would happen if an asteroid came? So that really depends what I said on the size and where it's gonna hit. So 140 meters is, it's kind of the minimum size where it could cause a certain damage, like a city size, or that's when you can have actual damage. You can have damage also if it's 80 meters, but bigger damage starts happening when it's larger than 100 meters. And when it's smaller than about 30 meters, you usually will burn in the atmosphere. But I don't know if you know in Russia, I'm not gonna pronounce it well, so I'm not gonna even try. In, I think it was 2013, it was a small asteroid about 20 meters, but just while the asteroid was entering the atmosphere, the sound waves could break glass windows. It could already cause some damage, even the ones that burn in the atmosphere. So it depends on the composition. If it's metallic, it might not fully burn in the atmosphere if it's 20 meters, but that's around the size where it would fully burn in the atmosphere, about 20 meters.
Thanks for sharing that. So as reading there, approximately 600,000 miles between each asteroid on average. I believe that may be in the asteroid belt, but and then there are these binary asteroids, which is, one primary asteroid and then an orbiting smaller asteroid typically. And roughly 15% of the near-Earth objects are binary or multiple systems, which would be around 432 binary asteroids. But it sounds like it would be unlikely that a hazardous asteroid would be a binary asteroid system.
It could be. There's no reason why it couldn't be. There are potentially hazardous asteroids that are binaries and triple systems. So there is no reason why it couldn't be a binary or a triple. And that's another reason when you are talking about asteroid deflection, these are the kind of things that you want to know in advance. If there's an asteroid coming towards us, some other thing you would like to know if it's a binary triple system. So that's a it's not just the size, composition, rotation period that all affect how you would deflect the asteroid, but yeah, if it has a companion, a satellite around it, that's also important to know.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because the tether between the asteroids could be a lot smaller with that b binary system.
Yeah, so the for the tether, let's say some people ask if the asteroid system that they're trying to deflect with the tether is already a binary, couldn't you just connect the asteroid, the two asteroids? So technically you could, but asteroids, binary systems, the moon of the asteroid is already on a stable orbit, so they are not affecting each other's orbit. So the both asteroids are orbiting in the around the same center of mass. They are on a stable orbit. So if you just connect something, nothing will happen because they were not going to affect each other's orbit. So you would have to perturb the orbit of the moon and connect with the tether, but perturb the orbit with the moon. Otherwise, just connecting wouldn't do anything. They are already stable, except when, let's say, there are collision between two asteroids. So in the beginning, that could in the future maybe become a binary system, but in the beginning, the orbits would be unstable. So until the orbits adjust, then they won't be in a stable orbit around each other. It's like the binary asteroids are like the Earth and the Moon. And we call it tidally locked. So we are always facing the same side of the Moon. It's the same with asteroids. So the Moon of the asteroid is always facing the same side of the primary asteroid.
Ah, gotcha. It makes more sense now. And in your research, you mentioned there are a couple questions that really underpin the tethered asteroid systems, and along the lines of the rotation and motion of both of those two asteroids.
Yes, because rotation is another thing that can affect the orbit. If you affect the rotation of the asteroid, this can always also affect the orbit of the asteroid. So the rotation makes a difference. Also the angle. So in the paper, we studied the angle that you would attach the asteroid. So if you attach the small asteroid and the tether, the equator or the pole, that would also change how much you deflect the asteroid, how much the orbit would change. Because it's rotating.
Gotcha. And you also mentioned that small bodies, they have a spin rate range from seconds to hours. Imagine it complicates things.
Yeah, so as every asteroid is rotating, nothing is just standing still in space. So asteroids are rotating, and yeah, it can be from seconds. Usually, there's a limit where you the asteroid won't fragment, which is 2.1 hours. But there are asteroids that are rotating faster than that, and then it was later. So first of all, you would think that if an asteroid is rotating faster than 2 hours, it should fragment and become and a bunch of pieces. But then it was discovered that asteroids could be rubble piles too. Rubble piles, it means they are kind of an aggregate of material. So that would give a different limit for that. So there are asteroids that are rotating really, really fast, much faster than 2 hours. And there are asteroids that are rotating very, very slow, hundreds of hours.
You start to wonder if we could almost leverage that rotational forces and momentum. So what were some of the results you and your team discovered?
Yeah, so one of the things is that the longer the tether, the larger would be the deflection. But of course, that's when for asteroid deflection methods, you have to balance the amount of deflection and also the logistics and cost and all that. So of course, if you have hundreds and hundreds of kilometer tether, like the longer the tether, the faster will be the deflection. But of course, there's a limit you gotta choose, so logistic material and all that. So, but the first thing is the longest the tether, the fastest would be the deflection. The second thing is, of course, the largest the mass that you attach to the primary, to the potentially hazardous asteroid, the faster it will be, larger deflection. So if you have a very long tether and a big, smaller asteroid, then the deflection will happen faster. But why would you need, let's say, if you discover the asteroid will impact Earth in 200 years, why would you need it to happen that fast? So then that's why it's important to know the warning time before, because then you can plan accordingly. So if you have 200 years to deflect an asteroid, you don't have to use a super long tether or a huge mass to connect to the asteroid. You just calculate what you actually need for the amount of time you have. So very, very important to characterize the orbit and the properties of the asteroid in advance.
Nice. Yeah, it seems like sending some probes to the potentially hazardous asteroids would definitely help with the data collection and you also, so when you mentioned deflection, we're talking about the orbital deviation of that asteroid system. And so you found that the simulation showed deviation values 5 times higher with a longer tether than a shorter tether, and that the point of attachment for the tether also influences the orbital deviation.
Yes, as I mentioned, the reason why the point of attachment, the angle where you put where you attach the tether makes a difference is because asteroids are rotating. So that makes a difference. So we tested from 0 to 90 degrees, the point of attachment. So that can make a difference because the asteroids are rotating bodies. And also, for this method, the configuration you put the system in the beginning, you can either send the asteroid away, or you can also bring the asteroid closer if the idea is for exploration, to perform studies in the asteroid. So if you want to bring it a little closer, you can always also do that with the tether assistant method. You just change the configuration of the system.
Nice. What do you think was one of the most exciting moments on this research project?
Well, I really like to use physics to discover, to prove concepts. So it was first interesting not knowing what we would find out. For example, finding out that some of the configurations were actually bringing the asteroid closer was interesting. And that was really interesting. And pretty much using math and like calculus and physics to prove a concept that, because if you talk about a concept, it's pretty simple. And I like simple ideas, because when you're actually, anything you do, it's based on natural effects, and it's really watching, you know, like the child that is like watching how things work. That's why the idea of when I thought about it, I imagine like two kids playing with a rope and spinning around each other. So I really like to see these things that look like a simple concept, but use physics to explain how it's working. So the calculation of this was much more complicated than the concept sounds. So I really like to play with equations and get a result to prove what I was thinking in the beginning. So I guess I would say the developing the physics of the concept, it's really interesting. And being able to prove a method by using physics and calculus.
That's awesome. Your calculations and equations were quite impressive in the paper. Well done. Wondering what does your research and work mean for humanity and life?
Well, it's just a contribution. So right now we are not, and I'm not just talking about this method, I think in general, humans, society in general, we are still not at a point where if something is happening, we know what to do already. We are starting to see asteroid deflection as something doable and not science fiction. We are at that point. And so I hope that my contribution can help in the future, and the future can be decades, hundreds of years, who knows, can help to someday, if needed, have an extra option if we need to deflect an asteroid. So right now, when you talk about this, some people is still, they don't take it seriously because it was never done. And also, so far, there was never a real threat. But the problem is, we can't wait to find a real threat to take this seriously. So the scientific community, at least, is already taking it very seriously. And at least in the US, in the past years, it was created the Planetary Defense Coordination Office. So it's starting to be seen as a serious topic. It's not something that you will think, and oh, if something happens, if we find out something, we will start to think about it. We are not at that point anymore. So my research, I hope it's an extra option to be developed. And also about this method, there's another thing that can be interesting, because tethers are not a new concept, space tethers. But the concept is new, but the idea of tethers in space, it's not new. It's used already in space. So for example, for these, you would need a very long tether. And it's interesting, the other part that can be developed, which is the instrumentation part, the material. So for example, there are studies of carbon nanotubes. So carbon nanotubes, and this is something that can be used in the future. So it's interesting how this other part, the engineering part, can be developed to help with this method that is a theoretical method. So I hope that in the future, this other part can be developed so it can become true someday.
It's very inspiring. And so you're the original inventor of the tethered asteroid system, it sounds like.
When I started studying this, I was at McGill University in Canada with supervisor Arun Mizra. So he studied space tethers for several years, and he had another student studying the concept, but it didn't consider the same. It was considered like bringing a mass from the Earth and not the same type of configuration we did. So the idea of having capturing an asteroid and bringing to another asteroid was my idea, but the tethers, no, it's not my I didn't create the tethers, space tethers.
Okay, gotcha. But still, I think it's holds a lot of promise. And the it does sound like a competitive method with the one you mentioned about tugging an asteroid with a nearby spacecraft with the gravity tractor method.
Yeah, so that's another method that would take a long time to deflect the asteroid, which is called the gravity tractor. So the idea is to send spacecraft and just place it around the asteroid to perturb the orbit. And you have to send a bunch of spacecraft for it to affect the orbit, because mass affects mass. So the more mass you send, the more will be the deflection, the larger will be the deflection. So that's another method. And my method was, I want to say a step ahead, but they're kind of similar, actually. It's using mass to perturb mass. But the thing is that by connecting the mass to the first asteroid, you can make it happen faster. So you can think it's a variation of the gravity tractor, because I'm also using the mass of the other asteroid, but I'm affecting it more by connecting it with a tether. But that's also an option. So that's what I said. It's really hard to say there is a perfect one best deflection method, because it would really depend on the whole characteristics of the asteroid and point in time.
Definitely. So it sounds like a tether could range from a few hundred kilometers to, you know, as much as 2,000 to 3,000 kilometers in distance.
Yeah, it will really depend on how fast you want it to happen.
Okay.
Gotcha. And then that's the part that is it's interesting, is that so this is the part that where the physics was developed, and then comes, when you want to make it come true, comes the industry part, and then which is the material and what is the material that you can use for this amount of size and for this length and all that. So yeah, that's why people should work together when it comes to asteroid deflection, because you need the scientists and you need the engineers and you need industry. So it's a combination effort.
Yes, and it sounds like we'll need a spacecraft to transfer the tether, anchoring equipment, and power propulsion, but also to move the small body.
Yeah, so for example, that's the science part. So you need a catalog of small bodies there to know which one. There are thousands and thousands, so that's not a problem, but that's the part that the science brings. It's a catalog of asteroids or smaller asteroids that are in space. So there are thousands and thousands of them, but if you didn't have them, then this wouldn't be feasible, because you need to know what's out there to pick one.
Yes. And you mentioned the carbon nanotubes as a tether material. I'm curious if you had to estimate what the tether thickness and mass may be in the range.
Yeah, so that's another thing that comes, it's another type of study, because then you're entering, it's not really the physics of it, it's the material engineering part. So, and I mentioned carbon nanotubes because they're very light and very resistant. So you need it to be resistant. And of course, anything you send to space, you want it to be light, because as I said, any extra weight you send to space, you launch, it's really expensive. So that is promising for space tethers.
You also mentioned tether nets for debris removal and tethers for power and propulsion.
Yeah, so this is all there are people studying tether nets for debris removal. So it's it's a similar concept, but you would use a net because you would be grabbing a bunch of smaller ones, or you can have a big debris, but it's more like you're fishing for space debris. So that also can be used. That's another application for planetary defense and what you call space situational awareness or space domain awareness.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and I wholeheartedly support everyone working in the space situational awareness, but we'd love to help support you fishing for the asteroids sometime. So.
Yeah, and for example, the Tethernet, it's being studied for space debris, but that's one of the ways you could capture the smaller asteroids to bring to the potentially hazardous asteroid, just using a Tethernet. So it's the same thing as you would do for space debris.
And with the capturing method, sounds like there's a lot of research on the anchoring into asteroids for mining and ISRU. A lot of the anchoring methods on the asteroids are revolve around the ultrasonic drillers that it's fascinating. They use the vibrations to hammer through the materials. But some of the studies on the moon I was reading about focused on the pneumatic drills with the compressed air to penetrate around 3 meters into the regolith.
Yeah. So that's an area that I'm not an expert, but I get the question a lot on the attaching the tether. So as I mentioned, for a bunch of other stuff, that also depends on the composition of the asteroid. If you have a carbonaceous rubble pile, it's really easy to dig, to drill, let's say, if you that's how you're doing it. But if you have a metallic one, then it's more complicated. So whatever you use, it's good that you know what the asteroid is made of.
Yes, I was reading most of the common asteroids are made of iron and nickel. But another fascinating concept that could help the anchoring mechanism could be the use of the 3D printing. And there's this nano anchoring process developed with the NASA NIAC program that kind of weld points directly into the regolith with some complex chemistry involved. It was cool.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of new studies related to that. And I'm not very involved in that part, but I know that there are a lot of things being developed in that area.
Awesome. And you also start to wonder what we could learn from pulling rocks on Earth.
Yeah, that's true. I find it interesting that when you are trying to study one thing, you end up helping another area that you didn't imagine. So it's...
Yeah. I imagine there are also a variety of methods and technologies that we can use to increase the orbital deviation of the asteroid system. Curious to hear your thoughts if any methods have came to mind about how to improve the orbital deviation and increase the distance from Earth of the collisional asteroid.
You mean other new methods?
Yeah. We had a good conversation with Aaron over in California, and so he was all into really shed some wonderful research on space manifolds and these kind of free falling trajectories throughout the solar system that act as kind of like space highways for bodies, and you start to wonder if we could leverage these manifolds for orbital deviation.
That's a good question. I haven't thought of that, but I was not sure if you're talking about like other methods that you wanted to know about.
Yes, yeah, I mean, I imagine pretty soon, you know, within, you know, this century and within a few hundred years, we'll be launching like, dozens and hundreds of probes and all sorts of, tethers in the space. Hopefully a lot for asteroid mitigation.
Yeah, because it's good that you test things first, a technology demonstration. You don't want to do it for the first time when it's actually needed. It's good to do experiments for technology demonstration too in advance.
Definitely. You do also wonder if we could transport mass on the tethers, and if you could pull the tether inward with a large spool, maybe anchored to one of the asteroids in the tethered asteroid system.
That could be done too.
Or another crazy idea is, do you think we could drape some kind of solar sail or sheets down the tether, such that we could catch the solar photons?
Yeah, so that's another method that was studied. It was not exactly with tethers, but it was placing a solar sail on the asteroid. So that's another method that was studied in the past. I've been developing with colleagues too, that is actually going to be published soon. It's a method with a solar radiation balloon that you connect the tether and you have a balloon. The other, instead of a mass, you have a balloon that will use solar radiation to deflect the asteroid that you're using tether. So then, coming from one idea, you can start developing many others. So you just gotta figure out the physics of it and calculate things, and if it works, then you can consider in the future.
Nice. That's very exciting. Thanks to people like you, we can figure out the physics.
Yeah, so one thing I like to say about asteroid deflection is that people have to be open-minded and a little crazy, you know, because any new idea, any new concept might sound a little crazy when people still don't know. It's like when airplanes didn't exist and you were considering flying a bunch of people in aircraft, and it sounded like a very crazy idea. With asteroid deflection, we are at that point where we are moving on, and we need people to have these crazy ideas that in the future are not going to look crazy anymore. So we need to be open-minded, and also have scientists that are open-minded to allow themselves to develop these crazy ideas that in the future are not going to look crazy. It's going to look feasible. So.
Yes, I love it. And yes, keep pursuing your crazy ideas.
Thank you.
So very nice to speak with you, Fabian.
Thank you. You too.